On a clear day, Mount Rainier towers over us. On a cloudy day, you can still find its name all over the place, on a high school, on a street, on your beer. But most of the people that live here will never make their way to the top of that mountain or to any of the thousands of other glaciers and rock walls here. So what about the people who do put themselves in those hard-to-reach places, like Dallas Glass, a professional climbing guide with International Mountain Guides, and Daryl Smart, who doesn't climb mountains for a living but still loves it, even after falling into a crevasse while climbing in Ecuador. How did that happen, Daryl?
This was probably about 2 in the morning, dark. I was actually climbing without a headlamp. We had enough residual light from the moon, and I punched through with my ice axe, which is not a good sign, and I felt like that I might have been on a snow bridge. And so I started probing about, and as I did, I could just feel the entire ground beneath me falling away, and the snow bridge basically was giving way. And as it did, I leaped forward and caught the front wall of the crevasse.
What was going through your mind as that snow beneath you was falling away and you were falling?
It was a really, as I was falling and I felt the security of that rope catch me, that was a really awesome feeling. it was just one of those moments you think, this is just really a good thing that I've got someone so skilled with me to make certain I'm not going to fall. As it turns out, the crevasse was probably maybe 12, 15 meters deep, so I probably wouldn't have been killed, but I could have been hurt seriously. So,
Dallas, someone listening to that on firm ground at sea level might think that is just a dumb risk to take. Why do you do it?
And it may be for some people, but for those of us who love to be in the mountains, it's about getting out there and engaging with nature in a different way. It's about pushing our limits. It's about seeing things that not everybody gets to see. You know, sometimes people ask, like, do you ever get used to the view? And no, never. I've never once gotten up on or near at whatever hour of the night, stumbled out of my tent and said, gosh, that's the same as it was yesterday. It's always new. It's always different. It's always unique. It's always special.
But there is risk in climbing. For certain, there is risk in climbing, but there's risk in driving our cars. And I mean, name something where there's not risk. I think sometimes in modern life, we try and insulate ourselves to such a degree that we've just taken, we've removed the joy of life. I mean, we've got belts, suspenders, and every other safety device to where we can't experience things that we were meant to experience as human beings.
I love hearing a lawyer embracing risk.
I'm a litigator, Dallas.
I totally agree. I think that there's risk in everything out there, and sometimes we treat risk as a dirty word, and it's not. The key for us in the mountains is identifying risk and finding ways to mitigate that risk, to bring it down to a level that we find acceptable. And the reality is, everybody has a different acceptance of how much risk they're willing to take. The key that when I'm teaching people, like when Daryl takes an avalanche class, or when I'm teaching crevasse rescue, or whatever it happens to be, what we're trying to do is help people make an educated decision. If you're gonna go in the mountains and you're gonna assume risk, that's fine, but let's do it intentionally. Right? Like, if you need to run into the burning building to save somebody, that's fine. But realize the building's on fire first. Don't just run into the burning building on accident. So we want to enable people to not just go out there and do risky things. We want to enable people to identify risk. We want to find ways to mitigate that risk. And then we want to bring that down to an acceptable level. And when it's not acceptable, that's when you turn around. That's why we wear a rope on a glacier. So when Daryl falls into a crevasse in Ecuador, he doesn't fall all the way into the crevasse. The rope stops him. That's why we wear crampons, or that's why we carry first aid kits. That's why we do all these things, is because we've identified areas of risk in the mountains and we're seeking to mitigate those risks.
Daryl, you said that climbing is a natural part of us. You have to learn not to climb.
Oh, absolutely. I think there's just a progression of mankind. I think we start, we crawl, we walk, we run, and you look at any little toddler, if there's something to climb, they're climbing.
Yeah.
It's really in our DNA to climb. And so we almost have to learn not to climb, where people say that's dangerous, you're going to fall. Or someone falls, a young kid will fall and hurt himself, and a toddler, and says, oh, that was not a good thing. So you have to learn how to protect yourself. Learning how to be safe climbing, there are techniques to learn how to do that. But I think just the innate desire to climb something, I think that's part of who we are. I think man was meant to climb. That is the progression of man, and people who climb understand that's really where we need to be.
Crawl, walk, run, climb.
Yes. It's obvious, isn't it?
I like it.
Well, that makes it sound like there's nothing to do but climb.
Yeah, at times I think that's true. I'm 60 now, and I'm still in good enough shape that I can do most things. But again, part of it is just this challenge that I don't want to sit home and watch TV. There are things that I want to do, and I know that the experience that I'm going to have, it may not be life changing, it may be, but there's going to be things that are going to really, I think, make me a better person. Mentally and spiritually and physically, all of it is just so important for me.
How are you a better person for climbing?
I had this conversation last night actually with one of my sons-in-law, and we climb a bit together, and really most members of my family climb with me. But it's, people say, well, you're climbing to get to the top of a mountain. Well, yeah, that's the objective, but it's never about the summit. It's about the effort to get to the summit. And there's all these little lessons that occur that are just phenomenal analogies that happen while you're climbing. And we don't control mountains. I think people say, well, you're going to go up and you're going to conquer a mountain. That's ridiculous. We don't conquer anything other than maybe fears that we have or doubts about ourselves. Can I really do this? Do I have the physicality to do this? So those are all things I think that we have to overcome, but we're never conquering the mountain. It's all about us. And mountaineering's hard. That's the reality is, people say, well, you went out and you had fun. Yes, you had fun, but you probably suffered a little bit as well. And you might have suffered a lot. And part of it is, that's part of the joy. It's not masochistic. I don't want you to think that. But part of the joy is realizing I'm tamping down some fear here. I'm overcoming something in me that tells me not to do this. And I'm going to do this safe. And I've got people that are going to work with me.
Are you a fearless person at sea level? Because of your climbing?
No. I don't think so. There's a lot of
came onto the radio. A lot of that would scare some people.
Well, I'm a lawyer. I'm not afraid to talk.
This is pushing my comfort limit.
are you fearless? You brought up conquering fear. Does that translate?
Yeah, and I don't know
the rest
if
of your
conquering
life?
Fear is.
Oh yeah, you didn't say conquer.
Well, like you're tamping down those emotions.
Down.
Yeah. Yeah, and you're saying, okay, I've got this. I can do this. And
that applies in the other parts of life?
Oh, it applies it definitely applies to walking into a courtroom. The first lead climb that I did probably 30 years ago, where a lead climb is on traditional gear, is where you're placing protection and then you're climbing on your own protection. That was a terrifying thing for me. That really, and every piece of protection, every bit of pro that I'm placing, I'm double checking it, and I'm thinking, okay, can I really do this? And you're in awkward positions, as you're placing pro, and it's hard to do. And tamping down that fear, and again, becoming more comfortable in a vertical environment, I think really is good for us emotionally. I mean, it I think it has application in all sorts of other areas of life. Fear keeps people from doing things all the time, whether it's starting a business or getting married or having children or, just even speaking up for people who are disadvantaged or less advantaged. Fear holds us back in so many ways. And I think climbing, there's just so many fantastic analogies. And I think, and again, this is not the primary reason I climb is to overcome fear or to tamp that down. But it is a feature of it, certainly.
I think one of the first times I guided in the St. Elias Range, St. Elias Range is in Alaska. It's in Wrangell-St. Elias National Park. It's the largest national park in our park system. It's about 9 million acres, if I remember right. That's massive. And we were dropped off by our small airplane in the middle of this glacier. Due to weather and landing conditions, we had been landed 180 degrees on the opposite side of the mountain we had intended to climb, 3,000 feet lower than our initial landing location, and about 3 miles farther from the mountain than we had anticipated being landed. When the plane flew away and the utter silence set in, as my small team sat in the middle of this massive amphitheater just pouring with ice, that's when I think I realized how many of these things were falling on my shoulders at that moment. We were in a location we didn't know anything about. We were in a location we didn't know if there was a route. We were in a location where we didn't have a good weather forecast, and no one was going to come check on us for the next 2 weeks. And we went climbing. And it was the most unique and special experience of my life because all those things came into play. We had crevasse falls, and we had to lead out on ice that I climbed with one ice axe instead of a set of ice tools like we would like to do normally. We had to carry heavy loads, and we had bad weather and bad visibility, and we turned around 400 feet from the top. We didn't summit, and it was still the most unique and amazing experience because it wasn't just that it was remote. It wasn't just that it was beautiful. It wasn't just that we had to challenge ourselves. It was all these things being wrapped up into one climb where a group of people came together to face a challenge and had a wonderful time. The number of times we sat around and drank cocoa in the tent at night and laughed. The times where you would come out for that alpine twilight that only really happens in the Arctic and get to see that special color of blue in the sky that happens at like 2 a.m. instead of the sun setting. And it was absolutely one of the most amazing experiences, and I couldn't imagine not having that as part of my life.
Was there a moment in there when you were miserable?
Oh, sure. I was coming down the glacier, coming back to base camp, and I was dragging. I had a pack on that was probably 60-plus pounds, maybe 70-pound pack, and I was dragging a 50-pound duffel. And the snow was just supportable enough to hold you, for about a split second when you would set your foot on it, and then it would collapse underneath you. And every time it collapsed, you wondered, am I falling into a crevasse or is it just the snow? And most of the time it was just the snow. And just fighting my way down through this glacier with this massive amount of weight and basically limited visibility. I couldn't see more than a couple hundred feet in any given direction. It was maybe the most challenging thing I've ever done.
Scary?
Sure, absolutely. You're pretty small when you're in the middle of the San Elias Range, and the peaks around you are 16,000 feet tall, and everything is massive blocks of ice and rock, and you are really tiny at that moment.
Do you guys think our new arrivals in the Seattle area, let's say they're here for a job, let's say if they're here to work in the tech industry, do you find that they don't appreciate the natural setting this is, or they appreciate it more because they've actually chosen to be here in this new place?
I think probably both. I mean, I know people that they see this and they're blown away by it immediately. They jump on a mountain bike and, you know, they're going to go out and enjoy this immediately, or they, you know, they start studying and or take a mountaineering course and they end up climbing Rainier or Hood or something. And they just, you know, they embrace this because of, you know, what they see. And I think there's other people that just go, yeah, that's a cool view, and put their head down and don't give it another thought.
You know, several of our friends here in Seattle, when they moved here for work as well, and I met them through my wife's job, and many of them didn't do all this stuff when they moved here, and now they're backcountry skiers, and some of them went rock climbing with us in Leavenworth a few weeks ago, and a couple of them summited a Rainier earlier this summer, and to see them take on this kind of this wild place that we have in our backyard, because it is world-class climbing. And so it's really amazing to see people moving in here. And I think when you described maybe some of the tech workers that come here and they're, you know, wondering how to get into this, you know, neither Daryl or I would be here if somebody hadn't taken us outside. And so one of the things that we really love to push for is mentorship in the outdoors. And that mentorship begins to instill a certain line of ethics, whether that mentorship is professional, you hire a guide to teach you, or whether it's your friend that takes you out climbing for the first time. That whole like kind of line of outdoor ethics with really is summarized very well by Leave No Trace. And if I was to summarize the seven principles of Leave No Trace kind of in one like phrase, it's just being polite to the outside and to other users. That's what it's all about. And so these people that are coming here and they're seeing the outdoors, they're getting to experience it maybe for the first time in their lives. The one thing I would encourage them is really seek out that mentorship. But the Cascades in our backyard, it's amazing. I caught a glimpse of them today as I was going to the grocery store, and I kind of paused, and it's, you know, looking over by I-90, and they all just got snow last night. Like, that's pretty spectacular. The alpine climbing season's coming to an end, but that means the winter climbing season is just around the corner.
You know, we're sitting in a studio, and soon we're going to go, we're going to be outside again. And I feel like I'm going to look around me and feel something a little different. What do you want to leave us with?
I would encourage people to go celebrate the fact we live in this amazing place. Go grab a friend, go out, go for a day hike. Go see the larches changing color in the North Cascades. Go look at the blueberry bushes right now in full fall foliage down on Mount Rainier. You don't have to climb anything big. Just go get outside and have fun. And the more you have fun, the more time you spend out there, the more you're going to appreciate it. And if you want to get into climbing, great. And if you don't, it's no big deal, but it's celebrate the fact you live in these world-class mountains here in our backyard.
Dallas Glass and Daryl Smart, attorney, climber, guide. It's been great meeting both of you and getting our heads outside together. Thanks a lot.
Thanks so much for having me.